Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. All right. Hey, well, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. I am excited and happy to have my friend Nate Gomez on here. So we go back a long ways, but Nate was a college wrestler, son of a phenomenal Hall of Fame wrestling coach down in Oklahoma. Our dads actually coached together for a little bit whenever we were young. He's a state finalist, you know, was a four-year starter for University of Central Oklahoma. He was on a national championship team. FCA wrestling, and then he is the current head coach for Oklahoma City University and just recently took that position. Anyway, Nate, man, it is great to have you on.
Yeah, man, I'm excited, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So, yeah, so Nate is a was a phenomenal wrestler, great technician, just a good overall wrestler. And it's funny, Nate and I, like I said, we knew each other whenever we were kids. Yeah. And we actually wrestled against each other twice in college. We split 1-1, and I've never even talked to Nate about this. So I remember the first time I wrestled him. You beat me the first time we wrestled, and then I got the second one. But I remember the first time we wrestled. I think it was at the Omaha Open.
Okay.
And it was like the very first match because I went like 7-1 that day. Like I lost the first match. You beat me the very first match. And anyway, so I remember I walked out, and my mind's like, okay, I know Nate. And if you were to see us side by side, Nate's a lot taller than I am. So taller and lankier, and I'm a little shorter and stockier. And so in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, I know Nate's a good technician. He's probably going to be real slick. And the whistle blew, and I was like, oh, never mind. It's a battle. Like head in, like head in the face. I just remember like catching me off guard. Like I wasn't expecting that. Yeah. Anyway, but so, you know, I always enjoyed watching you wrestle too. So even though we were the same age, we were different classes growing up in Oklahoma, and I was a fan. But so let me kind of start there, Nate.
Sure.
Tell me about your sports journey. So like getting into sports, what sports did you do growing up? And I know that wrestling was a big one in your life, but just kind of start out with that background.
Yeah. So, man, I kind of got a late start in sports and wrestling. My dad was a great wrestler, wrestled at OU, was a 2-time state champion in high school. And he was I think he would say this too, he was a better coach than he was a wrestler. And, you know, he coached at Midwest City High School, and they were not just state champions. They were national champion team. I mean, he was a phenomenal coach. And even when he got out of coaching, I don't think he ever stopped being a coach. You know, he just coached the people around him, and that's his kind of genetics. And so I grew up living with my mom. My parents were divorced when I was young. And so my dad was a great coach, but I didn't grow up constantly in that environment, you know. But when I'd go see my dad, I was always in the wrestling room. And always around, you know, always around it. So, and it wasn't until junior high I found it like a little friend group, and all these guys were wrestlers, you know, and they were all junior high state champions already. And man, I'd go over to their houses, and they would have brackets on their walls and medals in their bedrooms. There was something about that. I was like, man, I want to be like that. So it really wasn't a result of, you know, my dad and him kind of pushing me into the sport. It was really more about me wanting to kind of be like my friends. And so just really kind of started working hard, and I was way behind, you know, these guys were way, you know, already good. And I wasn't even on varsity. So I had a junior high coach named Mark Kirk. And he told me, man, I was the hardest working guy on the team. And at a very impressionable age, you know, that has stuck with me, and that has really just shaped me for who I am today. I mean, those words, I mean, you're the hardest worker in the room. You're the hardest worker on my team. And I want to be that for the rest of my life. I want to be the hardest worker in the room, you know. And so that has really kind of shaped my career. So, you know, sometimes I get introduced in a room. Nate was a great wrestler. Nate was a phenomenal, you know, and I, you know, my record is not amazing, but I think I did a lot with the talent that I had. You know, I did the most with what I got. I wasn't a national champion. I wasn't an All-American, but I worked hard for every single thing that I had. And so that was sort of my mindset as a wrestler. And I think, you know, when I go into a room or I'm a guest somewhere, I'm speaking, and, you know, I think sometimes I have more of a connection with kids because I'm not something, you know, far off, unattainable. I'm not an Olympic champion. I'm not a national champion. I'm just like they are. And I worked really hard and I achieved what I consider to be, you know, a lot of success with the talent that I had. So I'm just thankful, man. Wrestling was the only sport I did until after my wrestling career was over. Then I got into triathlon and had, you know, some success with some Ironman distance triathlon. So, but yeah, wrestling and that's who I am, man.
Yeah. So, you know, starting a little bit late in the sport and then, you know, your dad being a coach, mm-hmm. I'm a coach's son, right? So what was it like for you being a coach's son? And as far as like expectations, pressure, going home to that, you know, those type of things, the relationship you and your dad had when it came to wrestling. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my dad was a better wrestler, better coach than he was a wrestler, and he was a better dad than he was a coach. And so he let me be coached by my coach. So I remember one particular match, you know, when I was not very good, it was just, you know, hey, go have fun. And then once I kind of started to win some matches and get better, I remember, I think it was an open tournament in high school. I may have been a sophomore even, I don't remember, but I remember in the second period, it was my choice. And I instead of looking at my coach in my corner, I looked at my dad in the stands, you know, I'm like asking my dad what choice I should pick. And I think I won the match. And then afterwards I went over to my dad and I'm expecting this, you know, sort of, hey, good job kind of thing. And he said, hey, don't ever do that again. And I'm like, do what? And he said, you know, don't ever look at me for your choice. Your coach is in your corner. Your coach is your coach. You know, you listen to your coach. And that made an impression on me. And so he was, growing up in that, he's a firm believer that an athlete's relationship with their head coach is very important for the success of that athlete. And, you know, your dad can be a great coach in the world, but if he's not your direct head coach, then your relationship with your head coach is, as an athlete perspective, is probably the most important thing because that determines your success. You know, that relationship, especially in the sport of wrestling, is very important. It's an attitude of a heart. It's a posture of your heart, you know? And so whenever I go into a wrestling room and I'm teaching technique or talking to a group, that's the first thing I say. I said, if I do anything that contradicts your coach, I have now hindered you as an athlete. Everything I do, everything I say has to come under the authority of your head coach because that relationship is so important. If an athlete is a talented athlete, but they're, you know, they're constantly butting heads with their coach, I mean, that's a problem. That's a heart issue, you know? So, I think my dad put that in me. And you know, he was a better dad than he was a coach. And so I never felt like he was my coach. I always felt like he was my dad.
Yeah.
And, I'm really thankful for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. All right. So going to wrestling in college, you know, from being college wrestlers and going through that experience, it's tough. It's extremely tough. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, guys are coming from their high school room where they're at least one of the studs, if not the stud. And then they go in the room and all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of really good guys. Mm-hmm. And I remember my college coach saying, like on the first day, like, hey, there's out of everybody here, there's like 60 of us. And he's like, 3 of every 10 people here will make it through college wrestling all 4 years. Yeah. The other guys, you'll fall off and he kind of named some reasons. And, you know, you've been through that experience. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest takeaways you have? And it's cool because now you're going back and you're coaching college, but looking back to your athlete days, what are some of the biggest takeaways you have from college wrestling?
Man, there's a lot, but one of the things, like you said, when I went to University of Central Oklahoma, one thing that I kind of took for granted was the championship culture. They had won the national title 12 of the last 18 years, and it was a culture where second place was a disappointment. And I'd never been around that level of expectation. And because of that, the room was extremely competitive, and the mindset and the culture of the room was not always positive. You know, everybody, you know, you're not walking into a team environment where people are wanting you to be a part. You're walking into a team environment where people want you to quit. And so, you know, you're always one ranking match away from losing your spot kind of mindset. So everybody's really sort of protecting what they got and not super friendly, you know. I think there were 14 guys in my recruiting class. Some were, you know, partial scholarships, some were walk-ons, some were full rides. But I think out of those 14 guys, by the end of my senior year, there was only two of us left that didn't quit. So, you know, I was thankful. I had a fifth-year senior named Matt Serber. He's been the head coach at Tuttle the last 13 years. I think they've won it every year he's been there. And he was a fifth-year senior, and for whatever reason, man, he picked me as his workout partner. And I used to have to bring two different T-shirts to practice because just drilling with Matt, which, I mean, just soaking wet, you know. I just, like, he's trying to hurt me, you know. He's beating me, just drilling, you know. We're not even going live. He is just literally just throwing me all around. And you know, at the end of practice every day, he would say, "Be here tomorrow. You be here tomorrow." You know, I don't think he ever knew my name. You know, he was just like, you know, "Be here tomorrow." And then I remember our first home duel. I redshirt my first year, and our first home duel, Matt, you know, the whole team, they're out there warming up, and the light and the music and the crowd starting to fill up, and I'm just like, "Man, this is awesome." And Matt looks at me and says, "Hey, you got your stuff, and you know, in the locker room." And he said, "Go get dressed and come out here and drill with me." So warm up. I go into the wrestling room and I get my stuff on. I come back out and I'm like stepping out on the mat, you know, as the duel's fixing to start, and I'm drilling with Matt. And that feeling, I'll never forget it. And then, you know, he goes out there and just dominates his opponent. But that was my hook. And I think, you know, at every level of wrestling, the kids need that hook. They need that one thing that gets them going, "Man, I love this. I want to do this." And the college level is no different. You get in that room and it's sometimes discouraging. Sometimes it's lonely. And man, we take that. You know, I think we need that hook. We need that little seed of encouragement. And it doesn't have to be huge, you know. Just that little bit of like, "Man, I can do this. I want to do this. It's worth it." And so that was it for me. And you know, Matt graduated next year. I stepped in the lineup and was a 4-year starter. And so, but yeah, I mean, that was my, you know, my entry into college wrestling.
Yeah. So it's funny as you're saying that, like, this memory is coming back to me, and I don't know if it was Matt. I'm not sure who it was. So I remember when I was like a sophomore in high school, there was a Central Oklahoma wrestler. A guy from my town had went and wrestled there a year or two, and he brings back the Central Oklahoma wrestler who I'm pretty sure was a national champion or multi-time All-American. He came back, and I'm a sophomore in high school, and I think I'm really good, right? So like I'm the stuff in my mind.
Yeah.
Guy's like, "Hey, you want to work out?" I'm like, "Awesome." Beat the brakes off of me. Like, I've never been beaten like that before in my life. And I remember, yeah, like leaving, and like part of me was like, "That was absolutely terrible." Yeah. I'm not near as good as I think I am. Yeah. And the other part of me was like, "That was awesome. I want to be just like that dude."
Yeah.
You know? And but yeah, you find out pretty quick that there's levels to this thing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, as you spend more time with it, then you start to get up to those levels. But
yeah, I remember on my recruiting trip, you know, we went out to eat somewhere, and my first impression with the team, you know, it's they're all, everybody's nice because the coach is there and they're all friendly, and everybody's like, "Oh, Nate, you know, you got to come here," and everybody, you're meeting these cool guys, and you think, "Golly, these guys are awesome and they're friendly." And then coach leaves, and we go to somebody's house, and all of a sudden there's a wrestling match in the living room, and they sort of push me out there, and I just a little quick pass by one of them, and next thing I know, I got five dudes on me and I'm getting choked out, and they knocked me on. I got choked out. It was my first time ever getting choked out, and it wasn't my last time getting choked out, but it was my first. And I went home going, "Man, like, am I going to sign with this place where I just got choked out on my recruiting trip?" But I was so thankful for that because I knew what I was getting into. You know, so many of these recruits, I see posting pictures of these pretty wrestling rooms, and man, these, you know, these pretty mats. We got brand new mats. We got brand new facility. You get brand new, you know, team gear. You get all this. Man, beware of a place that only shows you a pretty wrestling room. You know, I want to go to a place where I know what I'm getting into. And that's, I knew exactly what I was getting into going to UCO. I knew that, man, it was going to be a fist fight every day. And I'm thankful for that. So,
Yeah. It's so when I very first went to college, I had wrestled at Missouri Valley my first year, and we won a national title when I was there. And a lot of tough dudes in that room, a lot of tough, which was awesome. It was amazing. I mean, I wrestled all Americans, national champions every day, which made me a much better wrestler. Mm-hmm. And, but I remember they had a brand new wrestler and brand new weight room. The facilities were incredible. And then I decided to transfer, and I transferred to Labette, and, you know, which is a junior college, and they were always a perennial top five JUCO, and mostly Oklahoma kids that were there. And I walked in, didn't know what I was getting into, but it was like two mats laying on the end of the gym with a curtain that separated them, a weight room that had one bench and one squat rack. And I'm like, what did I do? But it was the attitude and the mental toughness and the physicality, and the coach just really sold it, man. We don't need things, right? We're like Rocky Balboa. Like, yeah, we'll train anywhere, anyhow, and we're going to battle and be tough, you know? So I love that. Absolutely love that mindset.
Yeah.
Let me move into this. I want to move into your triathlete training, because a lot of times you posted about on your social media, mental toughness. Mm-hmm. I know that you have some phenomenal ideas there. You're really mentally tough yourself. So tell me how you got into like distance running and triathletes and those type of things. And then let's talk about mental toughness.
Yeah. So after my senior year in college, like there towards the end of season, I started having this weird numbness down my right leg. I sort of ignored it. And then it was almost like right after season was over, right after wrestling was over for me, that pain just got intense. And I started going and got an MRI. They said I had some bulging discs in my back. And then so tried a series of kind of epidurals to numb it, and then eventually had back surgery. And, you know, I went from being a wrestler, competitive in college, to, you know, not being able to tie my shoes. And that adjustment mentally was I couldn't, it was hard. And I went through a really just a dark time, man. My life's over, you know, just couldn't get out of that funky place. And during that time I was recovering. I remember I was in my bed and I watched the Ironman World Championships came on TV, and I jokingly told my wife I was going to do one of these triathlons, you know. And at that time I was, you know, I couldn't even tie my shoes, you know. And so we both kind of laughed. And then, this weird, just kind of the seed just started planting in my head, like, you know. And I remember one time, April, my wife, encouraged me. She's like, you got to get out of the house, you know, go for a run, go jog. And I was like, you think I can? You think I can go for a jog? She's like, I don't care if you can or not, like, get out of the house. And so I remember that first run just feeling like, oh, man, like, oh, it just felt so good to work out again. And I was like, I'm never going back to that place. I'm never going back to that mindset of just sedentary and just darkness. And so I just started running a little bit more. I remember watching Michael Phelps at Beijing in the Olympics. And I remember tried swimming for the first time. And it was so hard. I thought, man, I can't even go one lap. You know what I mean? This is, how can it be this hard? How can it, you know, and I just, that challenge of, man, I just want to stick with it. And I think I swam for like 300 days in a row or something like that. And one time this guy in the pool said, hey, where'd you swim in college? And I just sort of laughed, and I took it as a compliment. And I was like, I was a wrestler in college. I taught myself how to swim. And he goes, man, that's crazy. You should do a triathlon, you know? And so he said, there's a Redman triathlon in Oklahoma City, half Ironman distance. And he said, I'm doing it. You should sign up for it. And so again, the seed is just getting kind of planted. And I bought a bike from Walmart, and it was a road bike. And I started riding my bike to and from work. So I'd ride my bike to work and park it in my little cubicle. And these guys at work came up to me one day and they're like, "Hey, bro, do you ride?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm riding. I ride my bike to work, you know." And you should come riding with us. And so they'd go out to Lake Hefner and ride a couple of laps. And when I thought they meant let's ride, I thought, let's race, you know. So I'm just dropping these dudes, and then by the time they caught up with me, they're, hey man, wait for the group, you know. They stopped riding with me, and I just stuck with it, you know. I just started riding, and I signed up for that half Ironman. And you know, it was pouring down rain the day of the race, and some friends of ours were there, and they asked April, you know, hey, what's Nate's time? What's he trying to shoot for? And she said, he's trying to win it. He's trying to win this thing. And they sort of laughed at us. And I think I finished 176th place that first time. And then I was real discouraged. I was like, what am I doing? You know, thinking I could come out here and win this thing, and just feeling kind of silly. But I just stuck with it and just kept training and kept getting better and a little faster. And the next year, I think I finished 14th and then 13th and then 10th and then 3rd. And then finally, I won that race, that half Ironman. So it was just another goal for me. I enjoyed having something to shoot for again. There was so much more to manage with it. You know, you're not just one discipline. It was, you know, biking, swimming, running, and then the training for each, you know, how to develop each three, and then your nutrition. And it was just so much to do. I really enjoyed the challenge of it. And it was really through that process that I learned how to train my mind. Something that I don't think I really fully understood as a wrestler, that I learned as a triathlete. So.
Yeah. So tell me about those thoughts. You know, I've seen you post a number of times about mental toughness being like a lonely place, you know. It's kind of, and it's one of the beautiful things about wrestling or something like training for a triathlete, it's you versus you, right? And I dig that. I mean, I like competing against other people, but ultimately, it's you versus your potential. And a lot of champions think that way. But so tell me about your thought process when it comes to mental toughness, how you develop it. Is it nature versus nurture? Is it both? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a lot there, and some people are more naturally gifted at mental toughness. So there's always some kid at a tournament, and you don't have to tell them anything. They have a switch. They just click, and they go out there, and they live for that moment, and nobody has to tell them anything. They can just bam, and then you're like, how do you do that? So some kids are better at it. I was not. And so when I speak from a place of this is what mental toughness is, I'm sort of speaking to somebody who maybe struggles like I did. And so what I realized, I think what I did wrong in wrestling was I always felt like I was training for the event, visualizing. I was always pretending I was in the state finals. I was always pretending I was in a regional final. I was always pretending I was in the big match. And what I was doing was practicing not being present. Now, when you do that, when you're always imagining you're in a big match, when you're always imagining you're somewhere else, when you're always imagining your brain is somewhere else, you're practicing not being present. And then when you get in that moment, you've been practicing being somewhere else in your mind. And so for me, I sort of learned that mental toughness is being present. And when you increase the degree of discomfort, your brain wants out. Your brain thinks you're trying to kill yourself. And so your brain will think of absolutely everything except for what you're doing. And so, it started, I think, on these long bike rides. There were times where I would get out, I was doing some 50, 60, 70, even 90, mile bike rides. And I had this pretty intense loop, pretty hilly at first. And then, as I'm kind of heading back home, there's just wind in my face, and Oklahoma wind is rough. And if you get to a place where your nutrition is lacking, or you start, your food is, you kind of get a little bonky in your head. You need some sustenance. You need more than water. You need electrolytes, and you need Gatorade. And in that place, you kind of have a decision to make. You know what I mean? Do I keep pushing hard? And so your brain is just, for me, it was just like, just talking to myself and being okay and telling myself, can you be present when things aren't going good? Because your brain wants to think about, just complaining or thinking about anything but that moment. And constantly bringing your brain back into the present is mental toughness for me. And there are several different ways, to kind of develop it and work at it. But, that's kind of what it all boils down to,
When we look at training, so if I think back about my own training, and my dad, I started doing 100 pushups a day when I was 5. Like my dad would make me do that. I didn't have to do 100 at once, but I had to do 100 a day, and I still do it. And then I started lifting weights with my dad when I was 9. I was probably carrying around 5-pound dumbbells, and I would just do whatever he was doing. It was light. But I was doing dips and pushups and pull-ups, things like that. And then in season, I would train really hard, but let's just say general, as an adult, right? I would go, or even in the off season wrestling, 3 to 4 days of hard lifting. And then the other days were off days, either doing nothing or just kind of doing some light activity. I have switched that, and I pretty much work out every single day now. Days that are intense, active recovery type days as well. I have lifting days, running days, things like that. But when you're training for something like a triathlon, versus just lifetime working out, staying fit. What are your ideas? What are the things you have found that work best when it comes to training? I mean, are you training 6 days a week, 7 days a week? I mean, tell me how that process rolls.
For something like a triathlon?
Like a triathlon. And then I want to hear both your ideas on both. When you're training for like a triathlon, like a real thing. Mm-hmm. And then whenever you're not competing, you're just staying in shape.
Yeah. So even if you're, I think both things for somebody like me, you have to have a goal. And so it's very hard to tell somebody, you know, you'll hear people say, man, I just need the motivation. I don't know how you're so motivated. I'm just like, you know, I just want to sit down. I don't have any motivation. They don't need motivation. They need a goal, you know? And what I find a lot of times is people think their goal has to be something big, or it has to sound good. You know, like I want to get in shape because my kids, and I want them to be a role model for my kid, you know, which sounds really good. Or like, I want to quit smoking because I want to be a good example. You know, our goals for me, I've realized that they don't have to be good. You know, they don't have to be noble. They don't have to be big. They just have to be honest.
Yeah.
And what I found for me is that, you know, anytime you set out to do something that's difficult, there's going to be days that you don't feel like doing it. And your adversity will always ask you, why are you doing this? You know, and anything false won't live up. So, you know, if you go out for a ride and it hurts, or you're going out for a run and it hurts, or you're trying to be a state champion wrestler and it hurts, it'll always ask you, man, why are you doing this? And any reason you've given that's not true, it just is not going to sustain you in that moment. And so I say a lot of times, you know, your power is in the purity of your intentions. Like, how honest with you yourself are you about why you do what you do? And, you know, I finally, in triathlon, I think when I first started, I think I wanted people to think I was a triathlete. You know, I think I wanted people to, Nate was this hard worker wrestler. Now look at him. He's not a triathlete, guys. And I sort of enjoyed that perception. I wanted people to think, but listen, man, when you're 100 miles in on a bike, you don't care what people think about you. It's not a strong enough force to sustain the level it takes to be a champion. And finally, you just have to come to this place where you're like, I'm doing this because I want to do it, you know? And that's the most powerful place to be. Like, why are you wrestling? Because I want to be a wrestler. Why are you doing this triathlon? Why are you hyped? You know, because I want to. And there's a lot of power in that. And so, kind of to go back to your question, you know, every day you don't feel like it and you can do it, you separate yourselves from the people who can only do it when they feel like it. Mm. And so having a goal is, whether you're just trying to sustain a level of fitness or whether you're training for a triathlon, to me, everybody has a goal. They have a reason why they're doing what they're doing. And the harder the journey and the longer the journey, the more purifying that process will be. You know, we always see people who are posting pictures of their workouts, and look at me, and sometimes we can be judgmental and go, what is this person, you know? But I've learned not to judge people, you know, because the harder the journey and the longer the journey, the more purifying it will be. And they'll kind of come to that place where they're doing it for the right reasons, because anything else really won't sustain the difficulty of getting there. And that's why, man, I love your stuff. I love where you post, because it comes from a pure place, man. You're inspiring people, you're encouraging people, and I love it. So it's good, man.
And those are, dude, I'm gonna have to go back and re-listen to that and write down some notes. Some great thoughts right there.
Sorry, my dog's barking.
Oh, it's all good. So one thing I love about podcasts, man, I love podcasts that are just straight up real. I want to hear real conversations and real thoughts and real life, right? So when I'm listening to you, man, first off, I'm inspired right now. I'm probably going to work out after this. But here in the mindset of somebody who I know, like, has walked the walk, talked the talk, been through the struggles, been through the ups and downs, and fought through those, that's inspiring to me. I'm going to kind of switch this up and then maybe come back a little bit. But I know that you have a really strong faith in Jesus. And, you know, you made a decision to move into a full-time position with FCA and then FCA Wrestling. So tell me about your journey to your faith, all right? How did you come to faith in Christ? And then what moved you into FCA?
Okay. So, man, it really kind of starts, I guess, my senior year in high school. I had I gave, you know, a dedication level that I never really knew was even in that year. Maybe even unhealthy. So, I mean, looking back, I think it was not unhealthy, but at the time, I had even my mom concerned, hey, you might be working out too much, you know, like you've isolated yourself from friends and you are very, like, you are consumed by this goal of being a state champion. And you know, there were times where the janitor would come in and he'd be like, son, what are you doing here? Like, you are the absolutely only person in the gym. You got to go home, you know. Riding my bike home from school, I was just consumed with it, you know. And when I got beat in the state finals, I was lost as a person. I had, my identity was so wrapped up in being a state champion. I literally did not know what to do the next day. I didn't know. I mean, I was lost. And everything just felt so empty. I mean, even wrestling in college, that just seemed like it just seemed like, wow, man, I don't even know I didn't know who I was. And the summer before I went to college, I got a phone call from a friend that said, you know, hey, you know, do you remember Kevin Williams? And Kevin was a freshman in high school and I was a senior. So I didn't know him very well, you know, and I was pretty much focused on me and not a whole lot else. But Kevin was a freshman. He and two other guys were on their way to an indoor soccer game and their truck flipped and they all three were killed. And so my buddy Matt Myrick asked me if I wanted to go to the funeral with him. So I went to Kevin's funeral and the place was just packed. I mean, there were all these people and it turns out Kevin was a really special kid. He just, all these people telling stories about how his life and just how much joy he brought to every day. And then his youth pastor got up and said, man, I want you to know something, that Kevin's in heaven. And when he said that, it felt like something just came alive in me. And he said, Kevin's in heaven, not because he was a good kid and not because he did a lot of good things. Kevin's in heaven because there was a moment in his life where he said yes to Jesus Christ. He talked about, he told this story. He said, one day after youth group, Kevin came down and he asked me if I would pray with him. And he asked if he could invite Jesus to come into his heart and to be his Savior and Lord. And he wanted to get right. He wanted to give his life to the Lord. And there were probably 1,000 people at this funeral. And the youth pastor, I'm up in the balcony, and he looks right at me. And he goes, have you ever done that? And man, I'm going, you know, I don't know. And he goes, if you died today, would you know that you're going to heaven? And I just was like, no. And he said, you know, I don't know why bad things happen. And I don't know why Kevin died in a car crash. He said, but I know that you might be here so that you can have a second chance at life. And I knew, man, in my heart of hearts and all that I was, that I was there for that moment, that was my time. And everything in my life had led me up to that moment. I was trying to cram everything in this hole in my life and through sports and through accomplishment and just this, you know, all of it. And man, I don't remember lifting my hand. I don't remember. I just remember in my head and in my heart and in my spirit going, I need Jesus. Like I need the Lord in my life. And man, it felt like a weight of just lifted off of me. And I remember walking out of that. I remember walking out of that funeral, like, changed, you know. And that was the beginning of my faith journey. I was still very much, I had a long road to go, you know, in terms of living it out and learning what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. But that was my moment. And I look back and think that's where God met me. And since then, man, you know, there's been a lot of good days. There's been a lot of hard days, but that's where my faith journey began. So.
Yeah. Now, how did you move from, you know, where you are in life and I kind of want to hear the story, but, you know, going from like working in a job to what happened in your life to moving like full-time into FCA, like what was that journey?
Yeah.
And FCA is Fellowship Christian Athletes. For those who are listening, those who watch it on the video, you'll see I'm wearing an FCA wrestling shirt right now that Nate sent me. And so thank you, Nate. I appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. So, I literally, that funeral, it was like a couple weeks before I went to college. And so I'm in college, a new place surrounded by these wrestlers and, you know, these dudes are rough. This is my new people, you know? And I didn't really have a guidance of, hey, go to church or go to this or anything like that. So I started going to FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, at UCO. And there were some cool people there, man. I mean, just stud athletes who were sharing about Jesus, and they would bring in speakers, and that became sort of that was my place. And my junior and senior year of college, I became president of FCA at UCO. And I think we went from like 20 kids to like, we had 1,000 kids one night. I mean, it just exploded. And I remember it was a great thing. And after college, I was doing like kind of youth ministry. I thought I wanted to be in some type of role. I didn't know what that was, but I knew I wanted to speak and share my faith. And I would do a lot of youth camps in the summer. I would speak all over the place. And then, April and I, my wife, when we found out we were having a daughter, Hannah, something switched in me from trying to be youth guy to, man, I need to provide serious income for my family. You know, mowing yards and being a youth pastor is not going to work. So I went through a couple jobs and eventually landed at Chesapeake Energy. And I had no desire to be in the oil and gas business. I just, you know, kind of that mindset of be the hardest worker. I just, whatever environment I was going to be in, I was going to learn, I was going to work hard, and I was going to do well at it. And had a great boss and mentor. And in the 7 years I was there, you know, I tripled my salary, and it was a corporate environment, which I didn't ever feel, I never felt normal, and I never felt comfortable working in that environment. So I was succeeding and providing for my family, but meanwhile I was pretty miserable in the terms of just my fulfillment as a man doing meaningful work. And somewhere in that 7 years, I really sort of got discouraged with the Lord. I felt like, man, God, you know, I want to be doing more, I have all these gifts and talents, and here I am sitting behind a computer, behind a desk. But it was a weird spot because I'm making money and providing for my family, but I'm hating kind of what I'm doing. And then one day I got an email that said, come to the conference room. And me and about, you know, 25% of the company got let go that day. And so I knew that was sort of an answered prayer. I didn't know what the future held, but I knew that, man, that was God answering that cry in my heart, that I needed a different path. And I didn't know how hard that path was going to be, but that was the moment everything kind of changed for me in my career. 2 weeks later, one of my best friends, Andy Schneider, his son Colton, was killed in an ATV accident. And immediately God kind of restored that relationship with me and Andy. We had always been friends, but we hadn't been close over the last few years. And I immediately kind of came back into his life and just sort of walked through that season with him. And it was one of the hardest seasons of my life, and certainly for Andy as well. But you know, he was a coach and wanted to continue to be a coach. And so I just started coaching with Andy, and I was a volunteer assistant. I never really saw myself as a coach, but more of just a protector of Andy and just being there for him. And, you know, he had some hard days. And so I would just sort of take over when he couldn't. And you know, that began to kind of put the love of wrestling back into my life. After that, I decided I wanted to start officiating wrestling again. And so refereeing and just the love of serving the sport, you know, as an official, that was really kind of my mindset. I'm here to serve coaches and athletes. You know, you see some referees out there and it's like, man, this guy thinks it's about him. You know, it's like, I just hated those kind of refs. And so I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be a guy who, man, whether this may be this kid's only win of his whole life, I'm raising his hand like he just won the state title. And just really honoring that, serving coaches and athletes. That was my mindset. And so I just loved it. And then I went about 2.5 years without a full-time job. My family and I, we lost all of our savings. We had to use all my retirement. We ended up selling our house. And we went through a very, very difficult season of just financially trying to find a new full-time job. And it was much harder than I'm even going to be able to describe. I mean, it tested every part of us as a couple and as a family. I mean, it was brutal. But during that time, man, the Lord just began to put ministry back into my head and in my heart. And my relationship with the Lord went from surface to indescribably deep. I mean, it wasn't just God, I need a job. It was God, I need you, and crying out and repentance. Really, man, honestly, as I had just turned my back on the Lord in a lot of ways, and just the sweetness and the kindness of God. There's a verse that says His kindness leads us to repentance, and the overwhelming goodness and kindness of God in my brokenness was overwhelming to me. One thing that he began to just put in my mind and the discipline is, you know, the Word of God. I had casually read the Bible. I had read a verse of the day and would kind of go about my business, or, you know, a chapter here and chapter there. But as far as devouring the Word of God daily, it was really absent from my walk. And during that season, and I call it a season in the wilderness, man, God taught me that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And so during that season until today, I just, before I can do anything else, man, I got to be in the Word and reading and seeking Him. And through that has come just a lot of wisdom and a lot of godly correction in my way of thinking and way about carrying myself. And then about 2.5 years ago, John O'Dell, who's the state director for Fellowship of Christian Athletes in Oklahoma, his kids were working out, were at the place where April was working, and they said, "Hey, how's Nate doing?" And she said, our dad's been trying to get a hold of Nate." And so she gave him my number, and John O'Dell called me, and he said, "Man, you've been on my heart and my mind for the last 6 months. And what's going on with you?" And we met up, and he said, "Man, I want you to come work for FCA." And so that's been a blessing. A Fellowship of Christian Athletes has been an amazing opportunity, a huge learning opportunity. It's been a really big challenge as well, man. But it opened the door for me to be in a lot of wrestling rooms and being in front of a lot of people. And so that kind of led the way to FCA wrestling and me being the representative for FCA wrestling in Oklahoma, as well as serving as an area rep for my area in Oklahoma FCA, and just, man, serving kids and coaches and being a light and encouragement. It was just all these, just, it was awesome. And so really enjoyed that. And me and being involved with OCU wrestling, last year led to this opportunity for me to be the coach. So, yeah.
It's amazing how hindsight is 2020, and you can see how God kind of so we think like success is like point A to point B.
Yeah.
And yeah, straight line. And really it's like zigzags and waves and loops and all kinds of stuff. But it's, you can look back and you can often see where God has guided and protected in the process. And it doesn't mean that we won't experience adversity like you just shared and talked about, but the personal growth and the spiritual growth and those things that come out of that adversity, God doesn't let those things go to waste either.
Yeah.
So, you know, FCA is, it's big to me too, because I didn't give my life to Christ until my freshman year in college, but my junior year in high school, we had a football coach that started an FCA program, and I began going to that. And for me, I would go in, and it was once a week over lunch, and I went to it, and we didn't go to church, and I'm just like, man, this is pretty cool. I like this. Yeah. And I admired him. And so there was a point where I was just like, you know, this whole Christian thing is pretty good. I'm going to give my life to Christ. Yeah. And I hadn't really, man, I hadn't like fully accepted Christ, but what I wanted to do is, and this was just like my wrestler discipline, I'm going to quit drinking and cussing and chasing girls and all this stuff. And I did, I didn't do any of those things. Right. I just like stopped cold turkey. Yeah. And, but it didn't change my heart inside. So eventually I started a lot of anger and meanness and like fist fight and do stupid things. And my freshman year of college, when I truly gave my life to Christ, but those seeds were planted when I started walking into those FCA lunches. Yeah. That's when seeds were planted for me, which was huge. So, all right, you're now head coach, Oklahoma City. Yeah. And you know, I love it. It's, that's a program down there that I think can really, really do well. Mm-hmm. What are your goals at OCU?
Yeah, so I got to kind of give you a little bit of the story. Last year, my FCA teammate, coworker, Trayvon Smith, was serving as the Oklahoma City University wrestling, kind of just FCA guy, you know. And he really introduced me to the team. So he would bring me in and say, "Hey, Nate, you know, you want to come speak to the guys?" And so I would come into the room and speak to them and just really connected with these guys really well. And then Trayvon said, "Man, the guys love you." And Sam Hazelwinkle, the head coach, man, the guys love you, Nate. You have open door anytime you want. And then I really have to give credit to Sam for the way the team is right now. Like, I inherited a great, great thing. He basically, I use this analogy, he took a 500-pound boulder that was rolling downhill, and he stopped it with his bare hands, and he's got it pushed back up. He's pushing it back up the hill. I mean, I couldn't have done what Sam did. He turned a program around in every way, and the culture and the mindset and the perception and the talent. I mean, he really did the hard work, and I'm just coming and putting hands on it. I mean, that's I inherited a blessing from Sam. So I like to give him a lot of credit. And but it's a great group of guys. They are I say a special group, and they're not just good wrestlers, they're good kids. There's very little negativity, very little ego. They're humble. They're kind of just, I mean, they're like sweet kids. I mean, I love them, and I'm so excited because just the type of people that they are. They're fun to be around. They're goofy. They're good people. So my goals for the team this year is I want each individual to exceed their expectations. I want to challenge them mentally. I want to challenge the way that we talk. I want to challenge the way that we think. If somebody is, their goals might be to make varsity, I want their goal to be an All-American. If somebody's goal is to be an All-American, I want to stretch them to say, you can be a national champion. As a true freshman, you can go win it all. Like, it don't, you know, the things that we are talking about and speaking about are going to be, stretching our minds and our hearts to think bigger. And so my goal for the team is really just to have a group of individuals who are believing the most about themselves. And I think if we get a group of guys who are all talking the same and thinking all the same, we're going to have a special team. But really, I love them all as individuals. They're just each one of them. As I go through the lineup, I'm like, man, I love this kid. I love this kid. I just like them. And they're very individual, but they're very, I don't know, they're special. They're cool kids. So,
yeah, at the very beginning of this, interview, you were talking about your dad and, letting the coach be the coach and the relationships. And mm-hmm. For me, relationships are huge, right? So the first mm-hmm. chapter of my book is relational leadership. And I really believe a mm-hmm. big way that we reach people's hearts is when we build those true, authentic relationships with them. And then once you do that, amazing things can happen. What are some of the things that maybe you did last year and that you're currently doing or plan to do? How do we build those relationships with our athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I think wrestling is pretty special. You just spend so much time together in more of a maybe intimate environment than most sports. I mean, we're literally wrestling each other, daily. And so just the time that we get to spend together is going to be, I think it's going to be valuable. One thing that I'll, I'm having my first official team meeting on Tuesday. And one of the things that we're going to talk about, just some expectations and just how we kind of create our culture is zero negativity. We're not going to cuss. We're not going to talk bad about people. We're not going to make fun of people. And they don't do that, but it just to explain the importance of why we don't do that and why that can't be a part of our group. I was on at UCO, I was on a part of, three crazy talented teams. I mean, the guys who were on that team were just, I mean, some of them were on the ASIC poster, the best wrestlers in the country. I mean, these the talent level was unbelievable, but we could never win as a team. And then my senior year, we're on the least talented team I've ever been on. We were missing two weight classes. We got eight out of 10 guys, and we won the national title. And that team was unique because there was no negativity. There was, guys didn't cuss. Guys didn't talk bad about each other. Guys didn't drink. Guys didn't party. It was like we just accepted each other. We loved each other. We encouraged each other. We on the bench, you would look over there in your match and you got 10 dudes standing up, just like, let's go, Nate. I mean, how special that was. And when you create that culture where, we believe each other, we love each other, we build each other, there's no negativity. I think I sense that happened very naturally with this team. And so, it's a long road and it's a process, and, there's not naive to think there won't be challenges and obstacles that come up, but Man, that's how I'm gonna do it. So
yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I'm excited for you. I know you're a great leader and going to go in there and take those guys to the next level. And like you said, you know, you're building on the shoulders of Sam, who did a great job, but you're gonna, you know, take it up to the next level. So, all right, brother, one last question for you before we get off here. I was put people on the hot seat. All right. Yeah. It's not real hot, but okay. I'm going to give you an option. These three things. Mm-hmm. I want you to either tell me about a hero, highlight, or a heartbreak in your life. And then tell me the story, man, why you chose it. A hero, a highlight, or a heartbreak.
Oh man. They're all three just so unique. My brain just kind of went all three different places. You started with hero. And so I'll just, a hero for me is my friend, Andy Schneider. He lost his son Colton in an ATV accident, and walking through that season of life with Andy they're so hard to describe how incredibly hard that was. Every person that I would interact with, they always said the same thing. I can't imagine what he's gone through. But it wasn't that he went back into coaching. It wasn't that he still coaches. It wasn't that he was still a role model. It wasn't that he was still positive. It wasn't that I never saw him give in to darkness. I never saw him get into evil. It wasn't any of that. It was that he kept his faith in the Lord. And just watching him be fully sad at times, to watch him to be fully overcome with sadness, and to just let himself be all of that happened. And I just lose words, but literally walking through life with somebody who lost their son and still walk with the Lord, it changed me forever. Daily I text Andy, and just, you know, weekly, just, man, I love you. And I think I'm just so proud of him, but man, I don't know anybody in the world who, and there are other people. I mean, I know that people have endured these things, but I've never seen somebody do it so closely. So Andy is certainly a hero of mine, and he's also a class act guy. He's a phenomenal coach. He's a mentor. He's a brother. He's just a good dude, man. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been Coach, you know, Nate Gomez, who, Nate, high level people do things different than a lot of other people. And, you know, one thing for anybody listening that Nate does all the time, weekly, I get a text message from him, you know, saying like, "Hey brother, love you, praying for your family," or "What can I pray for you guys about this week?" Just things like that. Those little, and literally that's weekly, you know? So Nate, I appreciate those little details like that. Yeah. I say little, but they're so impactful.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I appreciate you, man.
Yeah. Well, I thanks for being on. I'm grateful. There's a lot of wisdom in this episode. Like I said, I'm going to go back and I'll be listening, take a few notes in here. And good luck to you guys this wrestling season.
Oh, thanks so much.
How can people contact you, either email if they're interested in wrestling or want to follow you on your social media? Because Nate's social media is very inspirational.
Yeah, I've had a lot of kids reach out on, you know, just Twitter message or whatever. And, that's probably the best way, you know, at Nate Gomez. I got on Twitter before it was popular, I guess. I got my full name, so at Nate Gomez. Which is cool. And I've had a lot of people reach out to me and I see every message. So I try to stay on top of that stuff. But if somebody's interested, just in, you know, reaching out, that's a good way to do it.
Okay. Awesome. So, well, like I said, I know you guys are going to take the program to a new level this year, as well as continuing your excellence with FCA wrestling. So thanks for being on, brother. Love you. And all I appreciate right. it.
Love you too, Chad. Thanks, man.
Bet. All right, y'all. This has another episode of Coach Pete's Perspective. May God bless you and smile upon you and give you peace. Till next time. See you. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach Pete's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts. That's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, you know, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up, and this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, t-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love and God bless.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep. Pop, lock, and rock. Coach P, who never stops.